evening, everyone. It's great to see you tonight. My name's Tim Capel, and we're going to have a think about some of those words that we just read. It's a story that Jesus told, and so it's great to have you here with us. I hope I have the chance to say hello to you afterwards. Do come and introduce yourself. If you're feeling brave, I'd love to meet you. Loretta LaRoche is a stress management consultant, and she's known for a bit of humour as she helps people find some stress relief. And I wanted to share with you some of her top advice so that you're all a bit less stressed, okay? She says this. She says, life is short, so wear your party pants, okay? That's some of her top advice. Life is short, wear your party pants. In other words, what she's saying is sometimes you just have to have a party to let out a bit of stress. And I think she might be onto something, because we'll all be able to think of times where we've been to a party and some of the worries of life just seem to fade away, right? Like parties make life fun. And you'll be able to think of maybe small parties that you've been to, little family gatherings, a birthday perhaps, or maybe the bigger gathering of a wedding, or maybe a really big party where you hardly know anyone, but you love going around and meeting new people. Parties are fun. They're an escape from some of the mundaneness or hard things of life. You know the old phrase, work hard, party hard. It's not bad advice, I don't think. Or the Beastie Boys song. Who remembers the Beastie Boys? I know I'm showing my age. But 1980s, hip-hop, yes, there's a few of you, well done. You've got to fight for your right to... You know, I reckon they did that better than you. I don't want to... Anyway, absolutely, you've got to fight for your right to party. This week as a church, we've run a number of events, and our kind of theme, if you like, the thing we've been thinking about is discover life. A life is short. We only get one shot at it. How do you make the most of it? And party hard is one option, isn't it? Let's just have a good time because life's short and let's enjoy it. And certainly that does help. Life is more fun when a few parties are thrown in. I think one of the surprising things about God in the Bible is that he wants us to have the best life possible. He wants us to enjoy life. People sometimes think that the Christian life is boring. That it's all about kind of obeying a few religious rules. You've got to come to church, you've got to pray, you've got to read your Bible, you're not allowed to drink too much alcohol, you're not allowed to have sex before marriage. And so they just think, this is boring. Who wants that kind of life? But it's a total misunderstanding of the Christian life. If we ever give the impression as Christians that life is boring, then shame on us, because God wants us to enjoy life. He made it. And Jesus, this man who lived in the first century, 2,000 years ago, claimed to be God. And he said, I came to give you life and life to the full. Who doesn't want that? Not just life, but the fullness of life. Enjoy it with everything. And not only does God want us to enjoy life here and now, he also wants us to have the best life in the world to come. Now, when you think of heaven, I wonder what you think of. For a long time, I thought heaven would just be, you know, floating on some cloud, playing a harp, wearing some nice white robes, and singing love songs to Jesus for eternity. Who wants to go there? No, I don't, right? Like, if that's what heaven's like, that just sounds pretty boring. That doesn't really excite me. And I think sometimes people think, actually, you know, I'd rather be in hell. Hell's more fun. I'll get to hang out with my mates and have a good time. That is a gross misunderstanding of hell, but also a gross misunderstanding of heaven. Heaven is going to be the best place ever. And I think it's surprising to us that nowhere is the Bible or Jesus describe heaven as a place that's going to be boring, sitting on clouds singing songs. When Jesus speaks about heaven, he often uses picture language, kind of metaphors, to help us understand a little bit of just how good it is. And we heard Jesus speak about heaven in that kind of a way in the part of the Bible which Matthias just read to us. They come from a book in the Bible called Luke, and Luke writes a biography of Jesus' life, and he records the story which Jesus told. Jesus is at a feast, we're told, and he's enjoyed this great dinner with some of the prominent and rich people of his day. And so you can kind of imagine Jesus and these rich people sitting around the table, they've had a good meal, and then one of them turns to Jesus and said, "Blessed is the man who eats at the feast in the kingdom of heaven." In other words, blessed is the man who eats with you in heaven, Jesus. Happy is that man. And Jesus turns to him and replies, and the words will be up on the screen. He says in verse 16, "A certain man was preparing a great banquet and invited many guests. At the time of the banquet, he sent his servant to tell those who had been invited, 'Come, for everything is now ready.'" Okay, so Jesus says a man is preparing a great banquet and inviting many guests. And he's speaking there of God preparing heaven and inviting lots of people. I wonder what's the best party you've ever been to? I'm married, so I'm obligated to say it was my wedding. It's true as well. But I wonder what's the best party you've ever been to? Well, here is a picture of God inviting people to the best party ever. He describes heaven as this great banquet, a feast where we sit down with friends and enjoy a massive meal together. Now that, I think, is a more appealing picture of heaven than sitting on some cloud. If there's a free food, I'm in, right? Now you imagine a table full of all of your favourite food. What's going to be on there? For me, I'm going to go, starters are those little prunes wrapped in bacon. You know the ones I mean? Yeah, what are they, devil on horseback or something? They're delicious. I love them. And then there's going to be some steak, definitely. Maybe some nice deep-fried fries. You can't really go wrong with fries. They're just kind of, a few people are screwing off their nose. That's all right. I'll enjoy them. You can leave them for me. A nice smoked salmon. I know it's not going to go well with the fries, but it's going to be on the table, and I'll get to that eventually. And then there's always room for dessert, so I'm going to go an apple crumble and some ice cream or something, and there'll be, a few globlets of wine and lots of craft beer, and it's going to be great. What would you choose? Here is this picture of heaven where this great banquet is laid out for this person, and everyone's invited. Come and enjoy this meal. And then what really makes a party is not just the food, but the company. I drove up from Dunedin to Christchurch yesterday, and it's quite a long drive, but the time went incredibly quickly because I was with a friend, Julian. I don't know if he's here tonight, but we drove up together, and I was amazed at how quickly the time went because you just spend time chatting to each other. And that's what it's like when you're with good company, isn't it? Life just kind of flies by. You're having a great time. And here in this heavenly banquet, eternity is not going to feel like a long time. It's going to fly by. It'll just keep moving because we're going to have such a great time with the people that we enjoy this wonderful meal with. Here is a picture of absolute happiness. And Jesus is describing heaven, a place where all of our deepest desires will be met as people and will be happy forever. You don't want to miss out on this feast. And the host of this party is God himself. It's his party. He's the one who's prepared it, and he's the one who sends out the invitations. When God created this world, he created it for us to be able to enjoy him and live in friendship with him. He gave us this world to enjoy, and he wanted us to also love him and know him and enjoy him. And so we still enjoy many things in this world, don't we? Lots of things in this world that we enjoy, things which God has made. We enjoy parties, we enjoy friends, we enjoy beautiful landscape, we enjoy food and sex and sports and all the good things the world offers us, God made for us to enjoy. But our relationship with God, which we were also created to enjoy, well, that relationship is a bit broken, isn't it? Many of us have lived in such a way that we love the stuff of the world, we love everything in the world that God's given, but we don't really love God. And perhaps you would say that that's you at the moment, that is really how you live. You're happy to enjoy all of the stuff in the world, but actually you don't really ever think about God, you don't really pay him much attention, and you certainly wouldn't say you love him. You don't really know the God who made you. Well, if that is you, then you're not alone, because the Bible says that every person has lived like that. We live in God's world, but our natural default is to want to have nothing to do with him. And sometimes it's said it's a little bit like a teenager. Now, there'll be some teenagers here. I'm sure this is not you, okay? But, you imagine a teenager who just takes the generosity of his parents for granted. So his parents, they have this lovely home, and they look after it for him, and they pay all the bills, and they keep the fridge stocked with food. And the teenager, well, he goes out for the day, and then when he gets home, he just kind of walks in the door and slams the door shut behind him and drops his bag on the floor and doesn't mind that his mum's just cleaned the house, and then he tramples through with muddy footprints and leaves them all over the place. He goes straight to the fridge, and he opens it up and helps himself to whatever he wants in the fridge, and then he wanders up the stairs, slams his bedroom door shut, turns on his loud music, plays it to 2 a.m., and then the next morning he gets out of bed at midday, grunts at his parents, leaves, comes back home later and does the same thing again. And his parents kind of look at him and say, "Hey, mate, how you going? How was your good day?" And he just ignores them. He's got his headphones on, his phone's out. He pretends they just don't exist. But his parents, they pay for everything, right? Now, how long, if your mum and dad, do you think you'd put up with a boy like that? I've got a 13-year-old son. If he starts behaving like that, he's out. Like, you can have him, Like, you wouldn't have put up with it for too long, would you? Before you kick him out. And yet, that is how so often we treat God in this world. We live in the world and love all the stuff he's given us, but we don't want anything to do with him. And the result is that God is angry with us. And we actually deserve God to kick us out of his world, if you like. But as much as he's angry with us and has every right to be, he also loves us deeply. And so Jesus, by telling this story, is saying that God invites us to actually be reconciled to him. God is actually holding out a hand of friendship and saying, come back and enjoy my company. Come back and enjoy a feast with me. That's what God is saying to you tonight. He's saying, I've prepared a place in heaven for you. The table's set, all of your favorite things. It's all laid out, and I want you there. You're invited. And then the question for us is, what are we going to do with the invitation? God invites you to dinner. What are you going to do? And so in the story, Jesus says the time of banquet arrives, and he sends out servants to get all the guests. Come on, everything is ready to go. But what's surprising is what happens next. Have a look at the next sentence, verse 18, or up on the screen. But they all alike began to make excuses. The first said, I've just bought a field, and I must go and see it. Please excuse me. Another said, I've just bought the 5 yoke of oxen, and I'm on my way to try them out. Please excuse me. Still another said, I just got married, so I can't come. Now, you'd think people would come running, okay? Here's the offer of this free meal. It's usually enough to get people to come out. Who turns it down? Well, these 3 guests do. They make 3 different excuses not to be there. And I put it to you that these 3 excuses are excuses that people still use today in order to ignore Jesus' invitation to heaven. Okay, so let's just have a think about them for a moment. The first guy says, I've bought a field and I have to go and see it, okay? Here's a man who loves his patch of dirt. I've bought a field and I want to go and look at it. It's a pathetic excuse, isn't it? Presumably he's already seen the field because he's purchased it, and he doesn't have to go and sort out the sale because it's already a done deal. He just wants to go and look at his patch of dirt. He'd rather look at his patch of dirt than enjoy this great banquet. And it's a pretty rude rejection of a very generous invitation, isn't it? What do you think it says about the host? I mean, you imagine if you're the host. You cook this amazing meal, you go to all this effort, you invite someone to come and have dinner with you, and they say, oh, look, mate, I've actually got a bit of dirt I want to look at. And it's not going to go down well, is it? Like, that's a little bit insulting. It's a little bit insulting. Here is, however, I think what a lot of people are like today, because here is someone who refuses to think about God, or if they do think about him, they choose to reject him because they are too busy with stuff they own in this world. They are too busy with stuff that they love in the world. They are too busy trying to get rich. They are too busy trying to get on the housing market or upgrade the house. They're too busy enjoying their boat or their holiday home or snowboarding or their sports. They're just obsessed with getting more stuff. You know, they want a nicer car, a bigger TV, a bigger house in a nicer suburb. They want the latest technology or the latest fashion in the wardrobe. And so they're so obsessed with stuff in the world, they have no time for God. So they hear the invitation and say, oh, no, I actually just want to watch Netflix. Sorry, God. And it's a pathetic excuse, but there's lots of people like it. And while they might not say it outright, what they really believe deep down as they live like that is that real life and real happiness is found in material things. You know, if I just have a little bit more money, then I'll be happy. If I could just travel and see the world, then I'll be happy. If I could just pay off the mortgage, retire early, and see out my days playing golf, then I'll be happy. The problem, of course, is that no amount of material things will ever make us happy, will they? Sure, we might go out and buy something new and enjoy it for a while, but eventually the novelty wears off and we just want something else. John D. Rockefeller was one of the wealthiest men of his day in the early 1900s in America, had a lot of money, and one day a journalist said to him, John, how much is enough? And he replied, just a little bit more. It's a good answer, just a little bit more. And that's what we're all like, isn't it? It doesn't matter how much we have, we just always want a little bit more. We're never satisfied. And if you give your life to trying to find happiness in buying a field or a house or a car or a holiday or some other material thing, you'll always be disappointed. You'll always want something more. In fact, because Jesus really does want us to have the best life ever, because he really does love us, he tells us that that's the case and he warns us. He says money makes you a slave. The more you have, the more you want. So don't let money and material things become the thing you spend your life chasing. I don't know if you've heard the story told about how you catch a monkey. Now, some of you would have heard it before. You know how to catch a monkey? You get a big jar with a nice narrow neck on it and you drop a banana in there. And the monkey comes along and he puts his hand into the jar and grabs the banana because he wants it. But then, of course, as soon as he's holding the banana in a fist, he can't get his hand back out again, right? And he really wants the banana. He doesn't want to let it go. So you've caught a banana and a monkey and a jar. Well done. Now, the thing is, that's what we're like as people. We chase after stuff, material stuff. And even though we know it won't really satisfy us, we refuse to let it go. And so we become trapped by our own greed, really, just always wanting more things. And that's this man in the story that Jesus tells. He's got his field in both hands, and he's refusing to let go. He's willing to miss out on this best banquet ever because he wants to go look at his dirt. And sadly, there will be many people who miss out on heaven because they just love money and material things too much. The second excuse is not much better. The second man says, I've just bought 5 yoke of oxen and I need to go to try them out. Now here's a man addicted not so much to money, but addicted to work. He loves his job. Oxen were used to plow fields, and the yoke was this big timber thing that went over their shoulders that kind of held 2 oxen together, and then they pulled the plow behind him. So he's gone out and brought 5 pairs of oxen, and he wants to go and try them out. He loves these new tools he's got, if you like, of his day, the animals. And so he turns down dinner to go back to the office and try out his oxen. He's obsessed with his job. It's not like the field actually needed to be plowed. He just wants to have a play with the oxen. And again, what an insult to the host of the dinner. You know, I'd love to come to your meal, mate. Thanks for putting it on, but we've got this new software at work and I'd quite like to have a play. I'd love to come for dinner, mate, but actually I just brought a new drop saw for the building site the other day and I want to go cut some wood. Here's a man just obsessed with the job. And again, there are many people like this in the world, aren't they? Workaholics. Perhaps you know some of them. Perhaps you are one of them. People addicted to their jobs. They work really long hours and they don't really have much time for anything else. Perhaps they're trying to build a successful business of their own, perhaps chasing kind of the next promotion, perhaps just enjoy kind of meeting deadlines and wanting to outperform everybody else, wanting to make a bit of a name for themselves. You know, I want to be the best doctor ever, or I want to be the best lawyer ever, or I want to design the best house or the best app or the best bit of software, and their work just becomes their life. But again, it's not a very happy way to live, is it? Because like money, it doesn't matter how far up the corporate ladder you climb or how successful you become, you'll always want more. And the people who chase work their whole lives often end up very lonely at the end of life. Some time ago, I read a book called Tuesdays with Morrie, written by a man named Mitch Albom. And the book records a series of conversations that this guy Mitch has with his dying sociology professor. So his professor has been diagnosed with, I think it was cancer, and he doesn't have long to live. And so he meets with his student every Tuesday night to talk about some of the things he's learned on his, about life. And really the summary of the book is that he says to his student that relationships are way more important than work. Because at the end of the day, work just doesn't satisfy, and one day you won't be able to work. And what you really want are some friends. Work never satisfies. If you want to discover real life, don't make work the main thing. And so this man in the story, he misses out on the banquet because he's obsessed with his job. And then the third excuse is this. I think this is the worst one. I've just got married, so I can't come. Why can't you come? You're already married. You've got the rest of your life to spend with your wife. Surely you could just bring her along. No, I've got to go home. I've just got married. Here is a person obsessed with relationships and sex. Okay, I've just got married, I've got a good night planned, sorry mate, I'm out. Now, once again, there's lots of people in this world who are similar. Perhaps they just really long to be married, they long to settle down with someone special, have a family of their own, enjoy companionship, looking for a deep relationship. Or perhaps they're looking for sex. You know, they don't want anything too much of a commitment, they just want sex on their terms, and that desire kind of dominates their life. But again, relationships and sex, they so often leave us feeling dissatisfied, don't they? I'm very happily married. I've been married for almost 18 years. But there are still times I feel pretty lonely and underappreciated. People who think that marriage and relationships and having a family of their own will make them happy are often disappointed to find that actually marriage is pretty hard work and children are pretty frustrating. I love my children, but you know what I mean. And people who think that sex will make them happy, and so they just move from kind of one sexual partner to another, well, they often they're left feeling so empty, left feeling so dissatisfied, left feeling hurt often after each experience. And then how often do the relationships we long for fall apart eventually anyway? Now, I don't want to be too bleak here because relationships are a really good thing. We need relationships. God made us to enjoy one another. So relationships are a great thing. We need them. Marriage is good. Sex is good. They're all good things. But they do often lead to hurt as well, don't they? People let us down. People betray our trust. People hurt us. And we hurt them, if we're honest. And then death adds a whole nother kind of element to this whole thing, doesn't it? Because even if we really do have happy relationships that bring us lots of joy, and I hope that many of us will have that experience in life, the reality is death just steals it all away from us. Death is horrible. It steals away the people we love. It just snatches them from us. It's a great tragedy that people refuse to take God seriously because they think they don't need him. They think that real life is just found in human relationships. And Maurice Schwartz, that sociology professor who spoke about the importance of relationships at the end of life, he thought that that was the case. But then, of course, he died. And even those relationships he appreciated, he left behind. And when we die, the person we meet first is not our mate or our spouse or our children. The person we will meet first is God. And we will look as stupid as the man in Jesus' story. Sorry, I can't come to your party. I just got married. Sorry, God, I didn't accept your invitation to heaven. I thought I'd be happy without you. Well, Jesus tells us how the master responds to these excuses. We're told in verse 21, the servant came back and reported this to his master. And then the owner of the house became angry and ordered his servant to go out quickly into the streets and alleys of the town and bring in the poor, the crippled, the blind, and the lame. Sir, the servant said, what you ordered has been done, but there is still room. Then the master told his servant, go out to the roads and country lanes and make them come in so that my house will be full. I tell you, not one of these men who were invited will get a taste of my banquet. You see, the people who in this life reject God's invitation to this heavenly banquet, they miss out. Now, Jesus says the master became angry with them and not one of them would get a taste of his banquet. You see, when you die, it will be too late. The invitation is for now. God is holding out his hand of friendship to you now. But if you refuse to take it because you're too busy chasing after money or work or relationship or some other thing in this life, then you'll miss out in the life to come. Notice who does end up in the master's banquet. It's the poor, the cripples, the lame, and the blind. Here are people who have nothing else in life. They know that they don't deserve the generosity of this rich master who's hosting a banquet. And so when they receive the generous invitation, of course they accept it. They know they don't deserve it. They can't get in there fast enough. And Jesus says it is people like that who will be in heaven. It is people who in this world recognizes God's extraordinary generosity in inviting them to be a part of a heavenly banquet. You see, at the end of the day, no one deserves to be in heaven. Just like no one deserves to be at this man's banquet in Jesus' story. The man was just being very generous. He initiates the party. He pays for the food. He sends out the invitations. No one deserves to be there. The master just wants them there, and so he invites them. And it is only those who accept his generosity who turn up. And so it is with heaven. None of us deserve to be there. All of us have done the same thing, which I've spoken of before. We live in God's world, but not loving God who gave us everything. And yet God invites us to be reconciled. He invites us to this everlasting banquet in heaven. In fact, he is so keen to have you and I join this heavenly feast that he sent his son Jesus to make it possible for us to be there. For Jesus says, no one comes to the Father except through me. You see what he's saying? He's saying there is no way for us to actually be made right with God, to repair the relationship with the God who made us, except to come to Jesus. This man, Jesus, a real man who lived in the first century in the Middle East, came to give us life and life to the full. And he does it by reconciling us to God. He does it by dying on a cross. the people of his day were so keen to reject him, they crucified him as a common criminal. And yet as he died in our place. It is us who deserve death. We've rejected the God who gives life. But Jesus died instead of us. And then he rose to life again. And he promises that anyone who believes in him, anyone who trusts him, will be raised with him and receive eternal life. The way to accept God's invitation to this heavenly banquet is to believe the words of Jesus. It's to be like these poor, lame, crippled, blind people who see that they don't deserve the invitation and so they gladly accept it. It is to admit that I don't deserve to be at this heavenly banquet, but I believe that Jesus can get me there. Now remember, Jesus is at this meal, as he tells the story, with rich and kind of prominent people of his day. And so when he tells them that it's the poor who are going to be at this banquet, it's a warning to the rich and the self-confident people he's with who don't appreciate the invitation. It's a warning to them that they're in danger of missing out because those on the outside in this world are so often those who are on the inside in heaven. And that remains true today. You know, in countries where there is great poverty, places like Africa and Asia, Christianity is growing at an extraordinary rate. 100 years ago in Africa, there were 6.8 million Christians. Today, there's an estimated count of over 685 million. People are receiving this invitation of Jesus and accepting it. And yet here in the West, well, it's declining, isn't it? People are rejecting the invitation. Too busy chasing after money and pleasure and work and relationships. I think that's our danger, isn't it? Even here in New Zealand, we have this attitude of, she'll be right, I don't really need Jesus. And so we refuse to let go of the things of the world and we ignore Jesus' invitation while many others are flocking in. What I hope you don't do as you hear this invitation is walk away from it. You see, Christianity is not about rules. It's not about trying to earn your way into the banquet. That's what sometimes people think. If I just live a good enough life and try my best, I'm sure God will let me in. But Jesus warns us, you don't deserve to be there and nothing we can do to change it. But Jesus offers us a solution. He offers us a free invitation. And the only way is to say, I'll take it. Christianity is not about rules. It's about relationship. God is offering you a hand of friendship, inviting us to join him in this great feast. And the question is, what will you do with the invitation? I hope what you don't do is ignore it. It'd be very easy to walk away and pretend you just never heard it tonight, or to just to laugh it off as a bit of nonsense. It's all right for them, it's not for me. But if you do that, then Jesus warns us that there is no other way to find real meaning or purpose or happiness in this life. If you ignore this invitation, then you'll always be searching for something more. You'll never find life and life to the full, because real life is found in being reconciled to the God who made us, and only Jesus can do that. It's a relationship which starts the moment we trust Jesus and believe in him, and it's a relationship that continues into the life to come. And I'd love for you to take this invitation seriously. Please don't ignore it. You can accept the invitation right now. You can make a decision right now and talk to God right now, and he'll hear you. You can tell him, God, I'm sorry, I've rejected you. Please forgive me. Thank you for sending Jesus to die in my place, and he will hear you. And if you pray that, then you're accepting this wonderful invitation. And you will know the joy that I know. And you'll know the joy that Lily knows of, that she spoke about before. The joy of knowing that the God who made you has this wonderful heavenly banquet prepared for you with him. Tim Keller was a wonderful Christian man, a well-known American pastor, and he died on Friday. And Tim Keller once said, "All death can do to Christians is make their lives infinitely better." It's a good line, isn't it? When you die, it just gets better because you get into this wonderful banquet. And don't you want that kind of confidence? Not just in this life, but in the life to come. Well, if you do, it's only found in accepting this invitation from Jesus to be reconciled to the God who made you. Why wouldn't you? What excuse are you going to make? Friends, if you've never really thought about this before, I want to encourage you just to at least consider these things. Don't walk away and do nothing. A couple of things you might like to do. You might like to read a biography of Jesus yourself. There's the one we heard from tonight is called Luke. There are four others, and there's a table out in the foyer, and there's a couple of those biographies on that table, and they're free to you, so why don't you take one and have a read and see what you make of Jesus.